Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
I'm Howard Feldman. Very, very powerful words there indeed from Dr. Anton Myberg. Joining us on the line, Rolene Marks from Israel. How are you?
Good morning. I do have to confess, first of all, you are not allowed to go on vacation. You know I have separation anxiety from you. And wow, Dr. Myberg, I have goosebumps.
Yeah, an incredible story that about Natan Sharansky. That he had this little book of Tehillim, this little book of Psalms, that even in his darkest days in Russia, we said he carried around with him, but he said, in fact, no, that carried him. Phenomenal.
He really is an extraordinary man, and also not just a national treasure to us here in Israel, but to all of global Jewry. I've had the pleasure of meeting Natan Sharansky, and if anyone knows me, you know I'm quite short and I towered over him, but he is a giant of the Jewish world. And, you know, his advice to all of us at the beginning of this pandemic about how to deal with solitude and if you are on your own was just really, really beautiful. And he really is somebody that we can all treasure and look up to. And a great friend of Nelson Mandela, he was.
Absolutely, he was. Of course, another larger than life figure, certainly within Israeli circles Benjamin Netanyahu is Adelson and Sheldon Adelson. He's going to be buried in Israel today.
Yes, he will be laid to rest on the Mount of Olives. His body has arrived in Israel, draped in both the Israeli and the American flags, with his widow Miriam or Miri, she is Israeli and accompanied by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And, you know, you and I spend a lot of time on social media, and whatever people might have thought about his politics, it's no big secret. He was a big financial back of both Prime Minister Netanyahu and of President Donald Trump. In fact, he backed all Republican candidates. Sheldon Adelson was one of the greatest philanthropists to the state of Israel, giving to projects and organizations as diverse as Taglit Birthright, to Yad Vashem, to Friends of the IDF, to women's organizations, and also supporting medical research in the fields of cancer research and other diseases. He gave billions. He was an extraordinary man, a real giant in terms of philanthropy, in terms of absolute unwavering love and support for Israel. And he's somebody who will be truly, truly missed. You know, I don't know if we will see a philanthropist the likes of him again.
Absolutely. How's it going to work in terms of the funeral, COVID? You know, Israel is known for these massive funerals, people always turning up to show respect. I'm assuming that that's not going to happen.
This will be held under very, very tight security, and only a select small group of mourners will be allowed. However, there will be a memorial service for him much later that will allow for people to pay their respects, probably virtually. But, you know, if there are crowds that will come to this funeral, which under normal circumstances would have attracted, you know, probably the tens of thousands, you know, it will be severely, severely criticized because we are in a state of extended lockdown, tightened lockdown, and extra battalions of police have actually been deployed to ensure that people adhere to this lockdown. Our numbers are still high, even though we have officially vaccinated 2 million citizens with the COVID-19 vaccine, an incredible, incredible achievement for this country. And we can talk a little bit more about how Israel is managing to do that. But if there are massive crowds, it will lead to a huge amount of criticism.
Yeah, and obviously rightfully so. It's a very, very dangerous time at the moment. So 2 million citizens have been vaccinated. Is Israel still in lockdown?
We are still in lockdown. Our numbers are still high. And I know there might be people saying, but you're getting the vaccine while the number's high. We have had people coming in from overseas. We have attributed at least 2,000 at last count of the current infections to the British variant of the COVID-19 virus. I understand it's highly contagious. We had, I think, about 20 at last count of the South African variant, and also concerns that there may be people coming in from South America who are carrying the Brazilian variant.
Yeah, I see that there's a variant there as well. You know, everybody wants to be South Africa. It's unbelievable. Go, you know, and they go and get their own variant. It is quite incredible. In fact, I was mentioning earlier that although that the official information that we are seeing and we're being told is that this variant is particularly transmissible, 70% more, it's apparently not making people sicker. But what we're seeing here, certainly, and the cases that and people that I am connecting with, and I asked Dr. Marburg the same question last night when we were chatting, he said, yes, they're being told from a scientific perspective, from a medical perspective, that it isn't more aggressive. In other words, it's more transmissible, but people are not getting sicker. He isn't seeing that. What he's seeing is that people are getting sick, and that might just be about the numbers, because obviously a greater number are more ill, and therefore he's seeing more people, but he thinks that that it is possible that people are getting much sicker. So we really do need to take heed and try not to catch this variant or pass it on.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and on the more positive side, we've had this extraordinary research coming out of Israel's vaccination program, seeing that those over 60 who've managed to receive the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm still waiting patiently to receive my first dose.
Yeah, because you're in your 20s, Rolene, so you've got to wait a while.
I am in my 20s, Howard.
Yeah, you know,
I'm in my 20s.
It's the one time that, you know, it's almost a compliment not to receive the vaccine. A friend of mine in Israel, who's my age, who's in his early 50s, said to me, you know, a few weeks ago, he got a letter to say, come and get the vaccine. And he said they must have looked at his medication and thought that the guy is deep into his 80s, so he was a bit offended that he was told to come and get the vaccine, but he went rushing along in any event. All right. So let's just also talk about, this has been a week of Holocaust comparisons, and I know that this drives you nuts just as much as it drives me completely dilly, but Selem also getting involved.
Mm-hmm. So let's unpack the Holocaust comparisons. You know, last week, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governator, the Terminator, whatever you want to call him, the former governor of California, gave a very powerful speech on democracy, you know, following the events in Washington, D.C. last week. But he also made the comparison of the Proud Boys and the type of people that were carrying out some of these riots, because I think we also have to be clear, there was a big protest, but not the entire protest was full of these kind of riots. There was a specific group that managed to breach, that managed to get into the Capitol, and we saw some horrific, horrific imagery. And I know you and I had a conversation about the guy that was wearing the Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt. He subsequently has been arrested. He's sitting in prison as we speak. But Schwarzenegger was very careful to explain why he was making the comparison to Kristallnacht, saying that, you know, the type of people that were acting like this were listening to the words of their leaders. And I was in two minds about it. You know, while I thought that his content about democracy was very powerful, I'm always loathe when there is a Holocaust comparison brought in. We've seen it throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, people saying, you know, I'm sitting at home just like Anne Frank. No, honey, you're not. If you are chilling and watching Netflix, you are hardly having the same experience
getting fat as
Anne Frank. Who along with her family and other people were literally hiding for their lives. You know, you could go out on your balcony and you could order online to your heart's content. And Frank, not quite the same experience. But we've also seen commentators making the comparison to Kristallnacht. A couple of months ago, it was Christianamanpur, and Christianamanpur got quite the verbal lash from Gideon Sa'ar last night on the issue of vaccines.
Yes, I heard that. Well, we'll come back to that. I want to hear about that after we've concluded this part of it.
Mm-hmm. But she made the comparison of the Trump administration to Kristallnacht, and after a lot of outrage, she eventually apologized. This week, because big tech have kicked anybody who's affiliated with QAnon or have put out any kind of what they see as white supremacist or racist invective, they have been kicked off various social media platforms. We know that Parler has been deplatformed because it seems to carry a lot of this right-wing invective. I mean, I'm sure you and I both lost quite a few followers, people who like to challenge us on a variety of different topics, subsequently kicked off. And we had people like Jeanine Pirro from Fox News, former Republican Congressman Steve King saying, this is just like Kristallnacht. Again, honey, let us just reiterate for you. Being deplatformed from your social media is not quite the same as having your house of worship burned to the ground, your businesses looted, your homes destroyed, and being rounded up and sent to a concentration camp. Let's just be very, very clear about that. And then we've had Glenn Beck of Fox News saying that it is like being in a ghetto. How do we explain to him that being deplatformed is not the same as being starved, deprived of medical attention, beaten, shot, and sent to a concentration or death camp?
They're very dramatic.
Are they not understanding?
They're very dramatic, I'm finding, in America. I don't know what it is. They seem to have lost perspective completely.
One thing that this has highlighted is that there is a very big need for proper Holocaust education.
Yeah, I think so. Because otherwise isn't it the same thing that that has happened with apartheid? Because if everything is the apartheid, then nothing is. And if everything is the Holocaust, then the Holocaust isn't even the Holocaust. What it does is it just diminishes the horror, the real horror of what was. And it's such a dangerous road to travel.
That is such an excellent point, because we've had B'Tselem, who consider themselves Israel's largest human rights organization, which they're not. In fact, they've been roundly not just because of who supports them, which are largely in other NGOs and governments with a particular anti-Israel agenda, but the whole accusation of Israel as an apartheid state was actually thrown out by the United Nations. And we know the United Nations doesn't love us so much. But there was an excellent op-ed written by Alan Johnson. He is the editor of Feather magazine, and he is seen as largely in the center, perhaps even center-left, and he actually annihilated this. He made the comparison between Israel and the rights of Israeli Arabs and clarified very clearly what apartheid was. And for South Africans, and especially the victims of apartheid, to exploit their experience to push your political agenda, and we know that this is blatant agenda pushing, is absolutely astoundingly abhorrent and appalling.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. Rolien Marks, have a fantastic weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll catch you next week. Shabbat Shalom.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.